Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call it 664 Seasons.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's go ahead out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and welcome in Luke Easterling of Athlon Sports NFL Draft Analyst and kind of figure out if what we've learned here in the early stages of the process. Obviously, the NFL draft order is now set. Luke, first off, I appreciate you joining me. I want to start with the top three picks. You got the Titans, the Browns, and the Giants. How many of those three do you think are locks to take a quarterback?
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I really think the Giants are the only one to me, and I think that the scenario that would present that is if I'm the Titans and the Browns, it's just not the year to take the best quarterback over the best players. This is not the year to do that, especially if we're at 1 and 2 in particular, because I do think that this class has two players that are, you know, blue chip, elite, you know, talent, you know, level players. And that's Abdul Carter, the edge rusher from Penn State, and Travis Hunter, who I think is a really good receiver and a really good corner. I don't think he's particularly transcendent at either one of them. The fact that he can play both of them at such a high level is transcendent, so I think that's what makes him really special. Those two in terms of talents, if you're telling me I got to pass up one of those two guys to take Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, I'm really underwhelmed by that. But if you're the Giants and those two guys are off the board, and now you're talking about, oh, do I take one of those guys over, you know, Mason Graham or Tet McMillan or the rest of that second tier of prospect? Now that's an actual conversation to me. So, you know, the Giants, I think, make the most sense to take the first quarterback off the board. But again, you know, the NFL has told us time and time again that they're willing to overdraft quarterbacks because the position is just too important. And obviously the Titans and the Browns both need upgrades. for different reasons.
Yeah.
But they both could use a quarterback. But that's why there's so much intrigue at the top, because they need quarterbacks. But do you really pass up the actual good, elite players in this draft to draft guys that at this point in the process for me are borderline first round grades?
Here's the problem with everything you just said. And on the surface, I don't disagree with you, but I was asking a coworker of mine about Abdul Carter. And we're like, all right, like, this guy might be the number one overall pick. Like, how good would this guy have to be to justify not taking a quarterback? And he says, Myles Garrett. I was like, okay, well, there's a team that has Myles Garrett, and they're terrible. And so you do have to do
it. Why are they terrible, Abe? Why are they terrible?
Because they don't have a quarterback.
Because they don't have a quarterback.
And so you have to justify, right? Are you trying to take a run at a guy and hope that he's the right guy? If you think he's the wrong guy, is it worth it to skip that? To me, it's also like, as a GM, this is why I can't be a GM here, Luke. I would draft for my job security, which this is a tough discussion. Right, you can draft Abdul Carter and still lose your job because he doesn't impact the team enough to not have you dropping drafting in the top 10 next year. Someone else then gets to make the. It's a wild discussion. I don't disagree with you on the quarterbacks, by the way, which brings me to the next question: Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, whatever order you want to order them, are they QB 1 and 2? And if so, who is QB3? Because I know a lot of Jackson Dart conversations are starting to creep up.
Yeah, I think Ward and Sanders are 1A and 1B, depending on, and they're so close to me that I think the difference will happen in the interviews. You know, when you get these guys on the whiteboard and you get to talk to them as people, that's what would come down, to which one gets drafted first. It's going to be the behind-the-scenes stuff and how they connect with a particular team and a scheme and a coaching staff. And so that part will stack the board for the actual league. I would put Ward just barely ahead of Sanders just because I think he's got a little more upside, a little more, dynamic playmaking ability. I think he's a little bit of a better arm. I think he's a little more erratic. I think that the range of outcomes is probably a little wider with him, a little more boom or bust there. But after that, it gets really interesting because – I mean, Jackson Dart's all the rage right now after having a pretty decent week at the Senior Bowl. I think there's a little bit of hyperbole out there in terms of how he played this week. I think he was pretty good. I think he was the best of a very lackluster group of quarterbacks that none of them really jumped out. But I think he and Jalen Milroe are the two that, with Milroe, it's even more boom or bust, where you just I think the floor is very low, but I think the ceiling is really high if he develops as a passer a bit more, because the arm strength is there and you love the competitiveness. You love the intangible stuff as a leader. He's a smart guy and he's obviously an explosive runner. So he's got that in his back pocket to be able to challenge defenses that way. He just needs so much work as a passer, particularly between the numbers, accuracy, consistency, decision-making. And so those things, it's really hard to project a quarterback at the next level. I think Jackson Dart probably has a little bit of a higher floor, maybe not quite as high a ceiling, but I mean, I've seen people tweeting yesterday, like Dan, I can't remember who it was, maybe Dan Orlovsky or somebody was like, Jackson Dart's a top 15 pick or a first round lock or something. I'm like, okay, let's back up a little bit. I think this is what happens every year when it's a weak quarterback class. We always were begging for somebody to jump up there and convince us that they're a franchise quarterback. I don't see anybody like that outside of those top two guys. Doesn't mean they won't go in the first round because they get desperate, but that's how I feel about them.
I got to ask, because I've talked to you, or I've heard from you just now. I've talked to a couple other people. It feels like I'm the only one in this discussion, and I know there's some weakness here. I'll take Quinn Ewers as QB3.
That's fine. That's fine. And again, that speaks to where that tier is, though. Like, if you're going to tell me, if you told me, passionately about Jalen Milroe and why he's QB3, I'd probably agree with you. If you told me the same thing about Dart, I'd probably agree with you. And Quinn Ewers, who I believe is 5 on my list right now, if you told him me he's 3, I'm fine with that too. I could see that. But that's what I mean in terms of the separation. I wouldn't take any of those guys confidently in the first round. If my latest mock draft up at AthlonSports.com right now, I go 3 rounds, including some comp picks at the end there, and Dart and Ewers sneak into that end of the third round, basically, I think, to the Jets and the Rams. So teams that have older veterans that maybe need somebody at some point. But if you're talking about taking those guys top 15, top 20, man, I just that is a huge desperation move just because you need something.
Yeah, and again, there's so many quarterback desperate teams. That's the great equalizer in this draft. It's not just the Titans, the Browns, and the Giants. I mean, you look at the Raiders, you look at the Jets, and there's a couple of other teams out there as well. Luke Easterling of Athlon Sports NFL Draft Analyst joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Luke, a guy that's gotten a ton of pub here in Atlanta, and the Falcons sit at 15. They're kind of not, I wouldn't say in no man's land per se, but obviously there's some alphas you're not going to be able to get because of where you're drafting. But there's one guy that put out one highlight at the Senior Bowl practice. It is Marshall defensive end Mike Green. And this is a guy that seems to be one of the faster rising pass rush prospects, led FBS in sacks, and a lot of people might have overlooked him because he wasn't, quote, at a big school. He did play against Virginia Tech and play against Ohio State, had some impact, but not a huge impact there. But I'm a little concerned. Guy puts out one highlight tape and kind of steps away from practice, and it's not even that the NFL scouts themselves are going to judge him solely on that, but the fans have already made up their mind that this is the guy for the Falcons. Do you feel this is a guy that should be a top 15 pick?
Yeah, I mean, in a general sense, I'll caution any fan base, Falcons or otherwise, please, please, at this, especially this early in the process, do not get locked into one player. Please don't do that to yourself. Like, the draft is such a fun time of hope, and there's so many players in this class that can be all pros, that can be Pro Bowl players. And so, you know, one focus that I always take when I'm writing content or writing the draft magazine that we put out is give every fan base a reason to be excited about whoever their team drafts, because you should be. You should never come out of the draft like, oh my gosh, man, we didn't get any better. Like, there's, you know, I can't believe we passed up. So there's always going to be a reason for you to be happy about who you take. So whether it's Mike Green or not, there's a lot of guys. I actually don't think the Falcons are in no man's land at 15, and it's because this defensive line and edge class is ridiculous. I think there is so much depth to this class. Obviously, there's only one Abdul Carter. But if you're telling me maybe somebody else takes Mike Green and he's not even there at 15, or maybe you pass him up in favor of somebody else. But James Pierce Jr. out of Tennessee, I think, has a ton of upside. I love Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M. The interior defensive line guys, both the Michigan guys, Kenneth Grant might be there in that range. If you need a nose tackle, Derek Harmon from Oregon had a hell of a year after transferring from Michigan State. He was dominant. Whether you need a three-tech, Walter Nolan from Ole Miss, whether you need those big, you know, interior guys, Tyleek Williams from Ohio State, there's so many interior guys of different shapes and sizes, edge guys of different shapes and sizes, that I think the Falcons are going to have plenty of options in that area. Mike Green is a guy that I think if he does go top 15, it's not going to be because of that highlight. It's going to be because he racked up a ton of sacks and he's explosive as heck off the ball. You know, I mean, everybody would love to have Myles Garrett, you know, or TJ Watt, guys that can play the run, guys that can impact the game as a pass rusher. Those guys are very rare, and you're probably not going to get them at 15. But that's why guys like Mike Green jump like that. It's not just because of one highlight. It's because they have explosiveness. They can convert speed to power like we did see on that highlight and put, you know, a big offensive lineman who might be a first-round pick in Josh Connerly Jr. on his butt. You know, those things, they're cool, but it's going to come back to the film, and his film is pretty damn good. So I think they're in a good spot. I think Mike Green could go that high, and maybe that highlight, you know, will get shown around. But it's because I think his film is really, really good, and you just can't argue with guys that are that explosive off the ball and can impact the quarterback off the edge like that.
Yeah, and another name you mentioned there, Shamar Stewart, is one that's got Falcons fans excited as well. Final question here for Luke Easterling, Athlon Sports NFL Draft Analyst, and you'll certainly hear him on the show with me a couple of times between now and the NFL Draft. Here in Atlanta, Bijan Robinson, top 10 pick a couple of years ago. Ashton Jeanty, and this was a year in which you kind of saw the return of the lead running back. Obviously, Saquon and Derrick Henry. Josh Jacobs had a big season for the Packers. Couple of guys around the league, including Bijan right here. Is Ashton Jeanty trending towards maybe being a top 10 pick?
I think it's possible. And again, that's just because I do think he is that echelon of player. There's multiple people that I respect in this business who have him as the next player after Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter on the big board in terms of just an overall ranking of players, regardless of, you know, teams or anything like that. He might be the third best player in this draft. Like, I think he's that special. He's three down back, perfectly built can run with speed, can run with power, great guy after contact, just always seems to break tackles and break off big runs. He can catch the ball. He can protect the passer, which is actually pretty rare for college running backs. So I think he's in that echelon. The problem is going to be what team values him enough to take him in the top 10, even 15, without looking at the rest of this running back class, which if you ask anybody is one of the deepest running back classes we've had in a long, long time. So it's the conversation is going to be, do I like Ashton Jeanty enough to take him over another first-round prospect that I really like at another position, knowing that on day two, I'm probably going to be able to find a 1,200-yard rusher who can also catch the ball out of the backfield, and is that gap between those two guys worth it to take Jeanty in the top 10 or 15 versus passing on a, you know, an offensive tackle or a defensive lineman or a corner or somebody that can also make an impact at another premium position, knowing I can get production from a really deep running back class on day two. That'll be the debate.
Luke, we're obviously just getting this process started. Thanks so much for joining us, and we certainly will continue to dive into real specifics as we get closer to the draft. I'll make sure to have you on again. Thanks so much for the time.
Hey, always a pleasure, Gabe. Enjoy your Sunday.